strange days indeed continues with Errol Bruce Knapp on UFO News Radio CFRB 1010.
What I want to do now is turn to Mark Dalton, who's visiting the Toronto area from Southend in England. He's with the Southend UFO Group. For the sake of listeners who can't place Southend...
Okay, well, Southend is located 50 miles from London, bottom right-hand corner of England. So, Southend's well known, certainly in England, for having the longest pleasure pier in the world.
And it has a train running on it.
That's right, yeah.
It's so long, yeah.
And we tend to get millions of visitors down to Southend every year, primarily from London, but from all over the UK as well. And part of the trip is to take the train ride on the pier and then walk back. And it's quite a nice walk.
How long have you been interested in UFOs?
I think I was about 10 or 11, fishing three-quarters of the way down the length of the pier. It was getting dark. I was on my own. That time of night, there wasn't many visitors, and saw an orange ball of light. Didn't take much notice. It hovered there for about 20 minutes. It then moved off at an unbelievable speed and repositioned in a different part of the sky, which, not being actually into UFOs or anything like that at the time, it was strange, but, you know, it was just a kid's curiosity. You know, well, that was a bit fast, but, you know, carried on fishing. It then moved back to its original position for about another 15 minutes, then came towards me, and by that time I was a little bit panicky, so I packed up my fishing tackle and decided to head home. The interesting thing is, in the late 70s, Southend was one of the hotspots in the world for UFO sightings, and there was talk that there was a portal off of the northwest side of the pier. Where objects would be seen coming in and out of something. I mean, I don't know, but I didn't see it go into anything or out of anything. It just moved in incredible speed. The Coast Guards, interestingly enough, reported to the local newspaper they'd seen it as well, which gives good evidence. You know, the Coast Guards know what lights... I mean, the Thames is a very, very busy shipping area. The ships going into Tilbury and the container port areas, and they know what lights should be in and out of the Thames on ships, etc., and they reported it to local papers, something out of the ordinary.
Yeah. Now, the Thames widens out into a huge estuary there. What is it, about 8 or 9 miles across or something?
I think it's about 3 miles across.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And at that time, the late 70s, there was a huge amount of UFO sightings, and very near me, actually, a few hundred yards away, is one of the UK's most top-secret military establishments. It's called Foulness Island. In the Cold War days, there was Russian trawlers coming up into the Thames that were spying on that area. No coincidence, there was also a lot of UFO activity as well, all along the Thames, but many reports around Foulness of objects ranging from balls of light, white, green, red, as well as silver cigar-shaped objects with these lights exiting and entering these cigar-shaped objects. So in the late 70s, I mean, there was a huge amount of UFO activity, and my sighting did get me involved in the subject at a very young age.
What is it that they do at Foulness or on Foulness Island that would be so interesting to both the Russians and UFOs?
Well, I've got to be a little bit careful what I say here. There's three parts to Foulness.
Uh-huh.
It's been long established as a testing facility for all kinds of ordnance, ranging from bullets to missiles. There's also been rumours, shall I say, of laser weapons testing.
Mm-hmm.
There's two parts that are pretty much well known what they do there, but there's one very secretive part, and no one knows exactly what goes on there, but I've got a very good idea.
But you can't say that on the radio in Canada, because we go out on the web and somebody over there will be listening in.
That's right, yeah. I've noticed that after September the 11th, a lot of the signs that indicate where Foulness is, the name has actually been scrubbed off of those road signs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we'll collect all the maps where it's marked.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't that difficult to find. I mean, why they would consider doing that, I don't know, but that they have scrubbed off certain road signs to stop anyone from knowing exactly where it is. That could be purely coincidental. I mean, as you probably know, UFOs can go in waves. I mean, Canada is experiencing a huge amount of UFO activity in Bonnybridge in Scotland. They are getting a lot of that seems to be the hotspot. Personally, I've seen stuff in Rendlesham Forest,
Now, you mentioned Rendlesham. There's been some interesting things go on there. I mean, we've talked very briefly about Rendlesham because there's really nobody on this side of the pond who's an expert on it, the way that Georgina Bruni or Larry Warren or any of that crowd. Basically, Bentwaters Air Force Base in England is located, what, next to Rendlesham Forest?
Directly opposite Rendlesham Forest.
Okay. Yeah. There was some sort of flap there. They had what they thought was a UFO land very close to the base and freaked a lot of the Air Force personnel out there.
What happened, I think it was about 1980, directly opposite the US Air Base, lights were seen over the forest. Now, I must say, none of this would have, I think, come out unless under the American Freedom of Information Act, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was digging around and found this memo called the Holt Memo. And that was basically one of the base commanders stating that there were objects seen in the forest around Christmas time over two or three nights. And they were objects that were seen for quite a few hours, but quite a few people on the airbase. To all intents and purposes, it was hushed up.
Mm-hmm.
The British MOD stated at the time that, that it was of no defence significance. I don't know if you're aware of Greenham Common, where the protesters used to chain themselves up to fences.
The peace protesters.
Well, in actual fact, Rendlesham Forest Base actually had more tactical nuclear weapons there than they did at Greenham Common. And they used to, I mean, everyone since they used to laugh, you know, about the fact that they was at the wrong base. Now, whether that's got anything to do with the UFOs, I don't know, but the fact remains that these objects were seen over the forest, and allegedly they affected the weapons within those silos. They shone down beams over the forest and over the base.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been lots of rumours that it's all a big cover-up and that, in actual fact, what it was a super-secret military helicopter, or indeed that the Americans were testing technology to down Russian satellites, because it was at the... A very tricky moment, a possible nuclear strike because of what was happening in Poland, let's put it that way.
Interesting, because there are reports from all kinds of military installations, ICBMs in the United States, in the missile silos getting shut down, getting triggered into countdown. I mean, just lots of bizarreness with UFOs hanging out above the underground silos. Now, you spent a fair amount of time in Rendlesham Forest looking around and doing, what, sky watches there?
Yes, we spent many evenings freezing to death practically in the middle of Rendlesham Forest with other members of our group, and we tend to meet up with UFO groups from across the UK that periodically will meet down there, and you know, we have a chat and network and you know, swap information. When we get new members to our group, we will take them to Rendlesham Forest and do what we call the Rendlesham Walk, which is basically recreate from the East Gate where the airmen went and investigated the objects down the track where they walked to the field where the objects allegedly landed. And on a couple of those walks, we've got a particular spot, a particular hill, where we do our sky watches from. We've been lucky enough to see UFOs on at least a couple of occasions. On one of those occasions, a guy wandered in after we'd actually wandered off to meet Larry Warren, who was doing the 20th anniversary.
He was one of the people involved, allegedly.
Yes,
And wrote the book along with...
He wrote Left at Eastgate.
Left at Eastgate, along with Peter Robbins.
Peter Robbins, that's right. Although Larry's testimony is contradicted by other witnesses who say he wasn't there, Larry always states that, okay, forgetting the actual incident, look around for the lights that are regularly seen in and over the forest.
So you've been doing that. Have you actually seen lights yourself?
Yes, I was showing a couple of new guys to the group. We went to a particular spot. We were there for a couple of hours, then we wandered off. And just before we left to go home, because it's a couple of hours drive for us, Rendlesham Forest, we went back to this particular hill. We tried different methods. I mean, we've tried meditations. We've tried the Stephen Greer shining torches in the sky. I mean, we'll try anything and everything.
Million kilowatt lamps.
That's it, and it actually works for someone in Manitoulin, I think it was.
Manitoulin Island?
That's it, yeah. I'm not sure the exact
here lake. In Ontario, yeah.
That's right, not sure the exact lake, but they unwittingly did something along those lines, but I mean, I'll tell you about that later, if you want that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we was there, overlooking a particular part of the forest where we knew this guy had taken 6.5 minutes worth of footage. He's an ex-retired policeman, so, you know, I'm sure his footage is 100% genuine. And two lights appeared, above the treetops. They were there for a good 2 or 3 minutes, and then a third kind of half appeared. Then they basically just moved off at tremendous speed. It's almost as if they came to say hello and then goodbye. Now, this 6.5 minutes worth of footage should be on the particular guy's website, and I'll let you know if when that comes about, because it was on national TV in England, and it is interesting footage. But it's not the first time we've seen lights over the forest. I mean, we've seen the light over the actual airbase itself.
How large an area are we talking here, Rendlesham Forest, roughly?
Rendlesham Forest is in Suffolk, which is a little bit further up the east coast. It's only about 7 miles wide, and it leads directly onto Orford Ness and the North Sea. There's been lots of testing of different things on the British base at Orford Ness, Whether that had anything to do with the Rendlesham Forest incident remains to be seen. But basically, you've got Rendlesham Forest and then you've got the sea. And there's been things seen all along the east coast for quite a few years now. So it's not just confined to Rendlesham Forest. And indeed, there were objects seen and investigated by Brenda Butler, who was co-wrote the book Sky Crash, before the Rendlesham Forest incident. So it isn't that the story started with the Bent Waters case. There was stuff going on before that of UFOs seen by locals. And she was investigating UFO reports way before the actual Rendlesham Forest incident. So it's an ongoing and it's a long story. And
were the sightings being reported before Bent Waters became a NATO nuclear base?
Well, in actual fact, I picked up something on the internet that there was a UFO tracked on radar going back to the early 50s. I talked to a researcher in Norfolk who can give you UFO reports going back 100 years for the same area. Look, I think some of the American airmen thought the forest was haunted because it did have a history of German aircraft crashing in the forest and ghosts and everything else, didn't it? Again, interestingly, where we saw the objects, it was pretty much above an old graveyard. So, you know, we're talking UFOs, we're talking ghosts or something else, you know.
There was a lot of discrediting going on by the skeptics over there in Britain, and a certain amount of by North American skeptics too, suggesting that what people were actually seeing was a lighthouse. Have you seen the lighthouse in your Rendlesham walks?
Yes, the lighthouse is prominent. But to say that the Americans weren't aware of the lighthouse, I mean, it's ridiculous. We actually did a walk with a skeptic who said, do you want to know what really happened? And we said, yeah, fine, you know, we're interested. And he took us on a mammoth walk across farmers' fields and near enough the 7 miles to the actual seawall itself, coming out with the most preposterous story you could ever imagine on how they looked through multitudes of bushes and saw the lighthouse ship that was moored off of the coast. And again, it just the skeptics are very good at having a go at old cases where we weren't there, but some of their reasons and explanations for the incident are just beyond reason. I mean, they're just daft. Simple as that.
Daft is the right word too.
Good word for it.
Venus, swamp gas, miners' lamps, I mean, just
Russian booster rockets.
Anything to try and rationalize the strange things that people are witnessing on an everyday basis. Let's talk about the Manitoulin Island thing.
Okay. About 3 years ago when I was over, my brother-in-law's relatives mentioned a UFO report from Manitoulin Island. Didn't have a lot of time at the time to investigate it properly. I just took some brief details. While I've been over this time, I just spent the last week at Manitoulin Island and went through the case from start to finish. And it basically involved a couple of boats being pulled in late at night. Two guys were shining the boat searchlights to help bring the trailers up the boat ramp. They then decided to have a little competition who's got the brightest searchlight.
How far up they could shine it and
And mine's brighter than yours kind of thing. And then from out of the distance, a bright light appeared, remained stationary over the middle of the lake. Now, bearing in mind, these are not UFO people, and it was only with prodding that I actually got the details off of them anyway. Talking to Edie, one of the ladies involved, she said that everything seemed to be stationary, quiet, and deathly still whilst I was seeing this object. And this is quite common in many, many UFO reports. She said she could hear, you know, the wildlife late at night, before she could hear people having a party. But when they witnessed this object, everything was completely still and quiet.
Mm.
So this object hovered above the lake for about 30 seconds and did scare him a little bit, I think. It then just shot off at an unbelievably tremendous speed. Now, I'm sure that's not the first report that where that's happened, but did they vector something in unwittingly using the powerful searchlights of a boat? It's quite possible.
Well, yeah, let's see what we can call in using our big bright lights, huh?
Yeah.
Going to have to be careful that we don't get something like that happening with SETI.
With which?
SETI.
That's C-SETI, and that's Stephen Greer, who was vectoring in 747 UFOs. Let's go to line one here, 416-872-1010, and sitting, waiting patiently for his turn is Henry, a regular caller. Welcome back to the program, Henry.
Hi, your guest is from England, right?
Can you tell?
Yes. I'd like to ask him, has the British government harassed him or his group, or have they tried to discredit him? And just to expand on that, how does the British and European government deal with UFO researchers and ufology as opposed to the American government?
Well, I mean, firstly, we haven't had any problems with the UK government. Their attitude seems to be, it doesn't exist, it's no threat to national security, and deny everything. We know they investigate UFO reports. They say they don't. They just maybe pass a glimpse at the odd UFO report. But as far as they're concerned, it constitutes no threat. So they're not interested. Having said that, I was on the phone to a UFO researcher for quite a while last year, and he had some footage of a black flying triangle. It was on a CCTV camera that had been set up for security. I don't know what happened to this actual footage and whether it's actually been presented to the public domain, but he was telling me how he was warned off actually putting this footage out. Now, after a good hour and a half on the phone to him, he said that his telephone calls had been bugged. And I said, how do you know that? And what happened, he'd had a call to say that he was basically warned off by someone who didn't give their name. He then had sent anonymously in the post an audio tape of 2 weeks of his previous telephone conversations.
They were sent to him?
They were sent to him. Mm. Proved that his phone was bugged. Now, he got involved with the British telephone service and said, how can this be happening? They didn't know, etc., etc.
Yeah, sure.
But I was very pleased after I'd been on the phone for an hour and a half for him to tell me that at the end of the call. So I thought, if the security services don't know what I'm up to, they certainly do now.
Henry?
I'm glad you have a British guest. I wish you'd have more international guests. I'm tired of the North American guys.
Yeah, but everybody's awake in our time zones. I mean, if it weren't for the fact that Mark were here now, he would be at home in bed asleep, and it would be 5 o'clock in the morning. Do you know how many Brits want to get up at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning to come and talk to some colonials?
Well, they're up at 5 o'clock to watch the soccer, aren't they?
Well, they were.
That's true.
Okay, got it.
Good night, Henry.
Henry must be seeing your England shirt that you're wearing there, Mark. So tell us about black triangles, Mark Dalton.
I don't know if your listeners are aware, but there was a huge, made the national papers in England, when a black flying triangle was seen near a member of Parliament's house.
Mm.
He denied it. Big cover-up. No, it didn't happen, but it was seen by witnesses. Now, a couple of reports that I've picked up. One states that, as you probably know, that Americans have got many, many bases in the UK. Quite a few years ago, a sighting report from a few years ago, a guy stated that he saw the triangle being escorted by fighter jets. Now, the Americans took a particular course over the East Coast and out to sea. Now, he gave me a report of 7 diamond-shaped objects that flew in formation following the exact same flight path that the Americans take, which I thought again was interesting. We've also had reports of black flying triangles from all over the UK, not just along the East Coast.
Mm.
And there's some recent ones where these triangles were escorted by fighter jets. For many years now, I've believed that they're the kind of later versions of the stealth aircraft, but what was interesting was the fact that these craft didn't make the normal noises that a jet propulsion aircraft would normally make. They did have like a low humming noise. And there's been many, many reports of black flying triangles from all parts of the UK. the Belgium incident, where a black flying triangle was chased over the sea towards Britain, and Britain launched some fighter jets to intercept it, and then it just moved off at tremendous speed after playing cat and mouse.
And left them standing.
And left them standing, as they tend to do quite often.
Mm.
I've got it on good authority that these triangles are military, are coming out of bases in the south of England, following flight paths that are used by certainly the American Air Force, and there's more and more reports of these triangles being escorted by fighter jets. So maybe they're the latest versions of stealth technology.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is these things are being seen in the early 50s as well.
Yeah.
That kind of makes it a little bit more awkward when you think you've found an answer. But maybe some are military, maybe some are not. But there's certainly been quite a few reports. And we also picked up a couple of reports of these triangles over Radwell Power Station. We actually notified the power station, and they just said, oh, okay. Particularly weren't paying any attention to it at all. But two fishermen that were fishing by the power station, why anyone would want to fish near a power station, I don't know, but evidently the waters are warmer around the power station and the fish are bigger. But it scared the life out of these two fishermen that saw this object. And they're saying that it was the size of a soccer pitch.
Mm.
So that's quite large.
So off the top of your head, what size is a soccer pitch?
Not sure.
The reason I bring that up is not to trip you up, but there was some discussion this week on the UFO updates list. Actually, Paul Anderson of CCRN had said that one of the crop designs was the size of two football fields. So Kevin Randall said, well, how big is a football field? Are you talking a Canadian crop circle research network? Now, is that the size of a Canadian football field, which is larger? So it was the size of a couple of football fields. Yeah. So how big is a football field? Kevin Randall was making a point about it. If we were to say, okay, it was X number of meters or feet, then people would have a fairly good grasp of it. And I was just trying to help the listener make the image, that's all. Dean put up on the monitor here, soccer pitch is 120 yards by 80 yards.
Right.
So that's a fair old size then. That was one that was being escorted, you said?
That one wasn't being excluded. We found it odd that a triangle would be over a power station.
What puzzles me, and obviously puzzles a lot of other people too, and I've voiced the puzzlement on this program before, is why take these damn things over to Europe to fly them when you've got the whole of the Southwest desert down there in the United States where nobody would see these things? Why fly them over some of the busiest spots on the planet, over Britain, over Europe?
Well, the Belgium case, where black flying triangle was seen by thousands, every kind of witness you can imagine from all walks of life saw these black flying triangle for a couple of hours. And then we had, I don't know if you're aware, we had a triangle over Manchester Airport that was reported by a pilot who literally had to swerve when a passenger airliner was coming into land.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the British CIA had to investigate this as a matter of course. And they said, yes, this object was there. It was also witnessed by a guy who had stopped his car on the ground, who saw this flying triangle motionless in the sky. And you've got to ask yourself, why would an object, if it was military, be so near a civilian airport? And and it did cause these pilots to take action very quickly, because they thought they were going to crash into it.
Yeah, but that was an unescorted triangle.
That was an unescorted triangle.
Now, was that one of ours or one of theirs?
Well, that's the question. They move at unbelievable speed. Fighter jets have been scrambled to chase these objects, and they can just move at will at speeds we can just marvel at. They've been seen over Europe, over the UK, and other parts of the world, and they continue to be seen, whether they're military or...
Who knows?
There's also been a report of a triangle being seen, again by fishermen, over a reservoir.
Mm.
Again, the connection with water, the power station is on one of the many rivers that flow into England.
Mm-hmm.
The connections with water are there, the same as they are with Canada and the lakes.
And lots of reports of water being sucked up by unidentified flying objects for no particular reason, and even being catalogued as I've mentioned a couple of times on this program, a fish farm in Japan, in a series of interconnected tanks, and all the water levels monitored by computer and connected to alarms, middle of the night, and the tech is there, suddenly the alarms go off, and all the water levels have gone down in all of these various interconnected concrete fish tanks. He runs outside, and there's this thing in the sky sucking up water out of the fish tanks.
We had a report, again, a little further up the coast to the Bradwell Power Station. I had a call. I was watching a soccer match at the time. And by the time I got home, my wife had said to me, you know, get up to Hawkwell very quickly. There's massive UFO reports. So shot over there as fast as I could. Unfortunately, it was there a little bit too late, but these two neighbours and all their children saw approximately between 22 and 25 objects, ranging from triangles to white glowing balls of light, in formation, go over their houses. One of the ladies phoned her mother, who lives a few miles away, who looked in the exact same direction but saw nothing. Couldn't see anything like what they were seeing. And I just wonder whether you have to be at a certain angle sometimes to see objects, because you can have people that are very close to each other that can't see what the other person is seeing. But 20 to 25 objects we're seeing.
Yeah, that's an odd one. You also get the cases where a lot of people are seeing a lot of objects visually and nothing shows up on the radar.
And it didn't. At Southend Airport, there was nothing on the radar at all.
We need to take a break here, Mark, and when we come back, we'll get John Velez and Kenny Young to climb in on the UFO conversation. They have some interesting things. Kenny Young has an update on what's been happening in Washington. Would you hang around with us?
Yeah, sure.
Normally, folks, we would be out of here in 15 minutes, but thanks to the gathering of the 600,000 up at Downsview, we are delayed by a half an hour tonight. We will come back. John Velez, Kenny Young will join us, Dave Furlott, Mark Dalton, and Dean Gulandi out in the control room there, and a nice gesture. Very nice piece of tweakage, Dean.
Strange Days Indeed will continue with Errol Bruce Knapp on UFO News Radio, CFRB 1010.